Chapter 2. 2.5 weeks before, Joe had sat in a leather-backed armchair across from Colter Allen, the governor of Wyoming, in the newly refurbished Capitol building in Cheyenne. Game and Fish Department Director Rick Ewig was with him. They'd both been summoned to appear before the governor. Joe had left a telephone message on Ewig's phone asking if the director knew what the meeting was about. Ewig hadn't called back. "Why am I here?" Joe asked Allen.
"I'll explain," Allen said.
Governor Colter Allen was in the midst of completing his third year in his first term of office. His term had been racked with problems, including a Me Too scandal, as well as revelations that he'd falsified his resume and he'd been backed by donors of questionable character, including Joe's own mother-in-law. Additionally, Governor Allen was thought by general consensus within the state to have fouled up the response to the onset of the coronavirus pandemic by lurching from strict shelter-in-place orders to a full-blown reopening within weeks, then issuing no guidance at all for months while the virus raged. Joe's relationship with the Republican governor was nothing like it had been when Spencer Rulon held the office. Although slippery at times, Rulon had enlisted Joe to be his range rider, and he'd sent him out to different places in the state on special assignments. And when Joe had gotten into trouble, which was often, Rulon had backed him up. Allen had assumed office with a misconception that Joe would do anything he asked, including gathering dirt on his political opponents and spreading misinformation on his behalf. When Joe had refused, Allen retaliated. If it weren't for Rulon stepping in as a private practice attorney and representing him, Joe would have long been out of a job and possibly indicted. Although there had been rumblings about the possible impeachment of Allen, Wyoming's first ever, the bills to start the proceedings had been killed in committee by the legislature. According to the Casper Star Tribune, the House of Representatives and Senate seemed to have concluded that rather than play hardball with the governor, they'd simply wait him out and elect someone new. By his very nature, Joe was non-political. He'd done his best over the years to avoid trips to the capital city, and especially during the short sessions of the legislature when nothing ever seemed to happen. He'd no doubt that he'd taken the right path, especially now when the finances of the state were in a tailspin, and all the committee hearings and general sessions seemed filled with anger and acrimony. Joe thought that Allen had aged in the past 3 years. The governor's once broad shoulders had slumped, and his salt and pepper mane was thinning and turning snow white. His movie star good looks, which he'd once parlayed into a few scenes in a soft porn pseudo-Western feature called Bunkhouse that no one had known about until his Me Too scandal broke, were filling out and softening. Jowls like the beard of a tom turkey hung down from his jawline and jiggled when he talked. "If you've been paying any attention," Allen said to both Joe and Ewig, "you'll know that we're facing more budget cuts. No one is safe, including your agency."
"I'm aware of the situation, Governor," Ewig said.
Unlike Joe, the director was duty-bound to testify during the legislature and defend the department's budget. Joe didn't envy him. Wyoming was unique because its financial health was determined almost solely by the boom and bust mineral industries and the taxes they paid on extraction. Citizens paid very little. There was no income tax, and property taxes were some of the lowest in the nation. When coal was booming, as it had been in previous years, the state was flush with cash. That was no longer the case, and lawmakers were trying to figure out how to deal with the downturn. It wasn't going well. The legislature